Well, hello, everybody. How are you doing?
Special episode, special intro.
Special, yes. I went into like some story time.
Well, it is. It's a very apropos.
Yes, it is. We're sitting by a fireplace.
Another themed episode.
It is a themed episode. We haven't done a themed episode in quite some time.
Yeah, the fireplace, or they call the San Fernando Valley. It's the same thing.
San Fernando Valley
may as well
summer
be a fireplace.
Is a fireplace.
This is the Madonna Inn of podcasts today. It's a themed podcast.
It is 148 degrees, and it is warm and delightful. We have extra bean bags in the garage today, I've noticed. Yeah,
Gargoyle is looking a little extra sullen, but we're okay.
We're going to have a slumber party. And it's going to...
I didn't bring my sleeping bag.
Giggle. We've already frozen Neil's bra. So it's going to be so much fun.
It's chilly.
Yeah. We're going to do each other's hair. It's going to be so much good time.
Pillow fight.
Pillow fight. Who do you think's cute?
I like experimenting. What? Did it get too creepy? Yeah?
So these,
a little too creepy?
The slumber party is the people are exploring their sexuality. Yeah, is that what's going on?
That's what slumber parties film are. Yeah.
Comedy Film Nerds podcast if it didn't go straight downhill.
Slumber party is just code.
We like to start at the bottom.
I like trying new things. That's what that means.
So is this like an adult swinger? This is like a key party? Like what is this party about?
I just have a Metro MTA annual pass, so I don't have a key. Do I put my card into the bowl? Is that what I do? Someone takes the card out and goes, hey, annual pass.
Yay. That's
a year full of fun
there. We're going to make sweet love on the bus with ex-cons and meth heads.
Oh, like we'd stand out in this time.
I know. It's a delight.
Yeah, but like, who's the accountant?
We're both.
Yeah.
I cannot say it enough. Public transportation is really good. You should all try.
I am serious. I actually have an MTA annual pass.
Is that how you get to work?
I'm starting when I go back to work after vacation, yes.
Good for you, buddy.
Yeah. Man, I'm looking forward to it, actually.
All right. What bus line are you going to take?
You know, I don't have to take a bus at all. I can take the red line to the 7th downtown, and then I take the expo line a block from work.
Oh, that's right.
It's magical.
They extended the expo line into Culver City or something like
for
that.
Neil.
I made some calls and, you know.
So we should introduce our guest.
Yeah. Yes. I think everyone knows
The most prolific Comedy Film Nerds writer on the site and also author of two chapters of the book, Comedy Film Nerds Guide to Movies, which is now available. And please welcome back to the Nerd Cave, Neil T. Weekly.
Why, hello there.
See, he's got the announcer voice, too.
Hi there, Glenn. Hi, Chris. How are you? It's great to be here.
You, sir, are the Sebastian Cabot of...
Wow, and I'm old enough to know who that man is.
I know. Well, we did an episode a while back with Sean Cullen, and he reminds me of Sebastian Cabot. And he is amazing. He should do the Sebastian Cabot story, The Family Affair.
Do the film.
Yeah.
The biopic of
Sebastian Cabot.
We're going to do cult movies today.
We are going to talk about cult movies. It's one of the chapters you covered in the book.
Yes.
So why don't you figure out what the fuck your problem is? No.
And we'll go from there. Yeah. Just to start us off, a little icebreaker.
I'll tell you what. I'll call my therapist and put him on. Yeah.
Drop your card into the bowl.
Yeah.
And then
we'll hand out transfers.
Well, the great thing about cult films is you can be all fucked up and doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Your definition of a cult film is?
A film that may or may not be technically good, but a unique group of people find it enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Many different levels.
Absolutely, different levels. Because, like I said, it may or may not be a good film.
Yeah, because sometimes it's a cult film because it was a really well-made, interesting movie, but it didn't explode in the box office for whatever reason.
Other
ones are...
Or it's just so weird that, you know, only a select group of people can enjoy it, but they enjoy the shit out of it.
Yeah. Yes. And an example of that would be...
Blue Velvet, Eraserhead, even more so.
Eraserhead
is disturbing on so many levels.
Yeah.
And... to most average moviegoers, it's like that. You can't even watch that movie.
Yeah, you can't get through the first 10, 15 minutes.
But I enjoy all every minute, you know, because it's just, you know, that weird. It's the perception of whether a cult film is good or bad is, it's different for everybody. So
now cult films, they can, it's not necessarily just weird. They could span every genre. You could have a sci-fi cult film, a comedy cult film, and
Fifth Element. Crazy science fiction.
Oh, yeah,
fiction.
Yeah. That is a crazy science fiction movie.
But a cult film.
And that's
has a
strong
a cult,
following.
How is that? That has a... How
it
does
has
that
a... This, it has a really...
Is it for the fact that the movie kind of goes off the rails in the third act and becomes ridiculous, or people really think it's good?
You know what?
Did I just alienate a bunch of people?
Yes. Well, about 50% of them. but for both of those reasons, though, I mean, there are people they'll enjoy it honestly, mm-hmm. and then there'll be people who enjoy it in spite of itself.
And there's a ton of people in that movie too. Do you look
Bruce Willis and Gary Oldman,
Chris Tucker. Then this crazy, space host, weird androgynous celebrity
at his most annoying vocal range, I think.
And but also there's like famous British comedians in there. Like there was it was like all these characters all just kind of put together in this weird mishmash of a science fiction movie.
Yeah.
And I agree, it's definitely something to watch. It really is.
For me, it's visually, I love the visuals in that movie. I think was the production design was really, really great.
The part that I really lost it and just started laughing uncontrollably, that's when you really knew it was a cult film, was towards the end. This is not a spoiler. Is when that diva, remember that alien diva? She starts singing in this opera voice and just starts singing. And then there's a shot of her from the back, and then she starts like busting all these dance moves, like this weird crazy dance. This song just changes to like a pop song in the middle of this aria. It's really, really funny.
It's also directed by a French director. I think it was Jean-Paul Jeannot, isn't it?
He's actually done Luc Besson. Great movies.
Action movies.
Professional. Mm-hmm. Another cult film.
Didn't he do La Femme Nikita as well?
The original, I think so. Google that immediately.
We're bringing that up right now.
Mila
as nerds, we should probably know that, actually.
Her costume.
Yes. He did the original La Femme Nikita, which, and The Professional, which are two amazing movies. La Femme Nikita
action
movie
is an
action movie. And I've always said, like, if you want to see how Hollywood can screw up a movie,
see the remake.
Remake is so dumb. But like I remember going into The Fifth Element like, oh man, Luc Besson, this is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
And this, like, literally in the theater, I saw it at the Cinerama Dome. I went, what?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Everyone who saw that movie had the exact same reaction.
I know I said that when I saw Gary Oldman's hair in that film.
Oh, then, Chris Tucker, I wanted to smother him with a pillow. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I could have tied weights around his neck and pushed him off into a deep pool.
But then even or like, lake I love
lake. And he's small body.
I love the costume.
Large or small, but, you know.
The costume made out of bandages. That was great. Yeah. For Jovovich, hilarious movie. So it is worth a look, and you will be, it's one of those movies where your jaw is pretty much down and open throughout the entire movie because you're like, well, this can't get any weirder or crazier, and it does. It keeps going.
It goes way past crazy, which I guess since it's been, the movie came out in 97, is probably the last and only time I saw it. I would love to watch it with a cult crowd, like a packed place of people who are like,
love it.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
Now that's actually hits on a good point. Now, Neil, are there still like those kind of almost like flash mobs of like people that go to of like
Fifth Element flash mobs? Yeah. dance out scenes. I'm
that would be great.
This whole process.
Oh no, I meant cult films in general. Like, are there still a lot of like revival screenings that a lot of people can get together?
One of the more recent ones, well, of course, Rocky Horror is still continuous across the United States. It's never stopped since it came out.
Right.
It's never stopped ever. Like, there's a midnight screening.
30 years of this
somewhere. Always.
Yeah. Right.
Isn't it still at the New Art or
I don't, you know, the New Art actually probably does still play it. I haven't seen it in a midnight screening in forever. But before the Sunset 5 closed, the Lemley Sunset 5.
It's reopening.
Oh, well, that's good.
Sundance Theaters. It's not Lemley anymore.
Them. Well, maybe they'll bring back, which I was going to say, a midnight screening they did when The Room came out.
Oh, yeah.
Every month. They had a monthly midnight screening. Packed, two theaters all the time. And I went to one. It was fantastic. But I mean, that's another example of a great cult film. But in the movie, in the vein of a really bad movie, it's the Plan 9 effect. You know, yeah, it's a terrible movie that when you watch it is just so entertaining. And people go to that. They went every month to that and bring props and yell at the screen, the whole works.
Right. Now, I think that's one of the elements too of a cult movie that's unbelievably bad. Is because you have to have that sincerity of the people making it really thought this was a good movie at the time. Anything from Ed Wood to Showgirls to The Room, they would never be cult movies if it was tongue-in-cheek or, ha-ha, we know this is bad. Right. It has to have that element of, I am making a masterpiece. That, you know, because you see it in the filmmaker's
totally
head.
Sold. Yeah. I'm passionate about this. This is the
Like, I remember that line from the Ed Wood movie. Oh, my God, it's so funny. He's talking on the phone. He's like, how did you like my movie? He said, it was the worst movie you've ever seen, huh? Well, wait till you see my next one.
Yeah.
That kind of passion. It's really... and that's what makes a bad cult movie.
What's the documentary about that phenomenon with that other movie, The Troll? Writer of
Troll 2.
An Italian director
who couldn't speak English. Yeah. Yeah. And there's no trolls in the movie. It's all goblins.
I've seen that film, and it's indecipherable.
It is. It really is.
I don't know. I have no idea what to make of it or where any of the logic comes or lack of logic.
Well, the great thing about that documentary is you get to see behind the sort of phenomenon of it and the madness that created a film like that. Like when they bring and the movie is screening and you got all these people lining up watching it, you know, ironically or whatever, the way The Room has the same effect. And then you get the Italian director and he's like a little mad and offended that the people are thinking this is a joke. And he's like, oh, I made a good movie. You know what I mean? Like, and that
that's a spicy meatball. Is that what you're doing? Is that how he was? Is that how he talks at the screening?
I'm Italian, all right. Gonna make me a proper troll movie. Gonna put a meatball in there. Couldn't afford a real troll, so just had people in hats.
I won't make it anything like the first one, though. Completely different.
I'm really taking it to the next level.
That's so great. The thing that's wonderful is people who don't work in show business who are like, how did that get made? You go, you understand, everyone's nuts in this business.
Yes.
And that's the guy who made The Room. If you've ever lived in LA in the late 90s, early 2000, when that he bought billboard space.
Oh, yeah. That one billboard never went away. It was up for years.
You know, and it was like, and everyone finally, it's one of those things where you went, what is this?
That's the only reason. I kept seeing those billboards. Yeah. And then I talked
then
to
you
somebody
have
who
to
saw
see the movie.
It, and I'm
yeah.
like, really?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I have to go and see this.
Yeah.
And
in a weird way, it worked.
And now I own it.
Because that's the thing.
Or it owns you.
In LA,
a little bit.
I remember when I first moved here, there was Angeline.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I forgot about Angeline.
Crazy Angeline, who was...
had a rich boyfriend that put...
billboards.
Yeah. Her husband was like some rich movie producer, music guy or something, and just put pictures. And there was this woman in a blonde wig with giant fake breasts and a pink... Everything was pink.
Have you seen her lately?
I'll bet you she looks great.
Well, I have to redefine the word great. She looks the same, but a million years older.
Yeah. How she drove around this pink Cadillac. There was the pink Corvette. The pink Corvette.
Yes. Yep. It's like she's out of a malfunctioning time machine.
Yes. And just this, like, I've got to be famous. And then,
two directions at once.
Driving yesterday, I haven't seen him in a long time, actor Dennis Woodruff.
Oh, yeah. I just saw him the other day.
Who?
New car.
Does he still have his car?
Oh, it's a new car.
New car. He redid it.
It's completely new.
Crazy.
Yeah. And he's got, of course, he's got his website address on the, because he's now into the,
so when you first
digital age.
Internet.
Moved to LA, you would see this shit. And actor Dennis Woodruff is a guy who took a car and just glued all this crazy shit on it
and cast insane me crap. You know, and then just wrote cast me
I gotta get hired. So you see this like insane desperation for fame, and that, folks, is how movies like Troll 2 get made. And same thing, and like if you, when you guys going back to what Johnny Depp was doing, he was showing how crazy he was, you know. a nice guy, but nuts, like wearing
this
Angora
weird
sweaters.
Yeah, yeah.
But a weird childlike passion and fascination for film, just no knowledge of how to go about doing it.
Yeah. How the world works.
He was just like, I'll just ask people for money and pitch this crazy idea, and it'll happen.
It's that whole thing where like nobody sets out to make a bad movie.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks they know what...
I don't know if nobody... I think there's some exceptions.
Not sure. Piranha 3DD
yeah.
might be an exception to the rule.
Yeah. anything from Michael Bay to the G.I. Joe movies.
They just see money. All they see are dollar signs.
Battleship.
I don't even think the concept of making a good film.
No.
He just says, what can I throw up on the screen
those are corporate
that'll
guys.
Generate tickets?
This is a great point. Isn't the opposite of not setting out to make a good movie kind of in a way setting out to make a bad one? Because like what you guys said is true. They're not setting out to make a good movie. Well, logically, then you're setting out to make a bad one.
Making a bad one. That's a good point.
They're not. I think in those giant, franchises, they're not even. They're just corporate guys. And if you said, guys, make us a
toast,
whatever, they'd be like, bam, this is the new Toast 3000, and it's going to be they're not even. They don't even know what. They're just corporate guys who are just trying to move units of whatever the fuck it is, be it a movie or, in Battleship's case, a board game about a movie, and there's a new board game for the movie about the board game. Like, it's insane. They're lunatics, but corporate lunatics who are in nice suits, but they're a half notch above fucking actor Dennis Woodruff.
Yeah,
they're
just in nicer
crazy.
Suits.
They're
nicer suits.
At least Dennis Woodruff, I think, has a desire and passion. To do some, I want to be a good actor, and I want to get quality roles. At least he has that going for him.
Yeah, he at least has some integrity in his insanity, whereas these guys are fucking...
That's the best, most respectable type of insanity, is you have integrity in your insanity.
You, sir, I respect your level of insane integrity.
Your madness is quality stuff. A-list insanity.
Charles Manson, very sincerely insane.
Very sincerely insane. And he too influenced the film industry. All right.
And there was the first train derailer.
Way to go, Graham.
Let's talk about cult movies, some comedy cult movies. Because these are some of my favorite cult movies.
Better Off Dead.
Better Off Dead is an amazing movie.
Actually, most of John Cusack's movies from the 80s.
Yes.
Say Anything.
Yeah.
Like that scene, I don't want to... buy anything sold or market anything sold or franchise or purchase anything when he just goes on that long I don't want to manufacture anything that's sold or manufactured or sold but we've talked about it before on the show UHF.
Love UHF.
So, me too.
That is a cult classic.
And that is a hardcore comedy. Al Yankovic movie. Anybody who likes Yankovic is going to be in that theater watching that movie. Mm-hmm. Anybody else is going to be like, I don't understand.
But also you see like The Nanny and Michael Richards and all these character actors. Yeah. And even the guy from General Hospital is Geary.
I think comedies lend themselves more to cult films because the minute you go for a quirky or a specific type of comedy that is off of the mainstream broad comedy, you are already kind of going into
a specific smaller audience.
A smaller audience that is going to be
but more passionate.
Far more like Spinal Tap. I remember when Spinal Tap first came out, watching it, and I was however old I was, and me and my buddies were like, this is hilarious. And some guys in like Pantera shirts or something like that were like, this is bullshit, man. And they were pissed. They left. They were like,
they
didn't get the joke.
Clearly
and they were offended.
The joke.
Like that the music video.
If you're wearing a Pantera shirt and you're offended by anything, re-examine your life.
No, but I mean, it happens if somebody doesn't get it. The music video I did for Palm Strike Dance Party, someone wrote in there, and the jury's out, this guy's just shitty, like the song sucks, and he's not, like, someone posted.
They type in that voice.
I'm pretty sure they do, actually. That's why it didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
It's clearly
I know that very person he's talking to.
I think I'm smart, but I don't get it voice. And they were like, the whole point was it's supposed to be stupid. And I think, really that's where comedies, but I mean, like, Idiocracy. is, and again, part of that is goes into what we talked about earlier with like Idiocracy and maybe even UHF was the limited distribution. Because a distributor went, well, I'm not putting this on 3,000 screens because no one's going to get it, you know, because it's not a rom-com or Pie in the Face or whatever. And I think that sort of...
I think UHF got a decent distribution
because
it was in the height of, and I like, weird. If it's weird saying this, but in the height of Weird Al's popularity.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're right about Idiocracy. That barely got a release.
Oh, I think it went direct to video because they were just...
It might have.
I think the term is limited theatrical.
UHF came out in 1989.
Right.
Yeah.
But one, I think my first introductions to cult comedy was probably Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Oh, shit.
I mean, yeah. I remember watching that at my buddy's house over and over again. Then the thing about cult movies that you make the point in the book, Neil, is you show them to your friends, you share them.
Yeah.
That's kind of the whole point. You don't do that with like mainstream movies. Don't you say that? Yeah, okay. Oh, no. I got a film you have to see. And then you watch it again with your friends.
Yeah, because it's a movie you love, and the people you think will love it, you're going to share it with.
Right.
I'm not going to share, you know, went to see The Jerk when it came out in the theater. My mom, my dad, and stepmother took me. Of course, they were mortified.
Right.
But that's the kind of movie I'm like, oh, I saw this movie. You have to see this movie. And the people I knew would like it.
Yeah.
So that's, you're going to share a movie, a cult movie, with people who are going to have the same
And you need
point
to name your dog Shithead.
Yes. I tried. My dad didn't like seeing that was
well,
a good
that movie
idea.
Is, but going back to that whole thing of, that's such a fun thing to either be on the giving or receiving of is the discovery of this
thing. At a slumber party.
At a slumber party. It's some weird, bi-curious slumber party that Chris is hosting. Some weirdo gargoyle. Let's explore ourselves.
Yeah, it's a Metro card.
I'll give you a transfer.
Train runs every 10 minutes.
And it goes off the rail every 8.
Oh, shit.
Oh, here comes the tunnel.
I remember in college, now this wasn't a film, but my buddy Micah turned me on to The Original Prisoner. He goes, oh, you got to watch this. I was like, what? And just watching those, whatever it was, 15 episodes of The Prisoner, I was like, my mind was blown away. And especially back then, where it was like, you know, hidden VHS tapes that someone would pass around. There was no internet, there was no Netflix or whatever. And then when you found this thing, you were literally finding a hidden treasure. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And as I remember when we had Alan Havey on the show earlier this year talking about just old, you know, he's a big classic movie guy, and he reiterated the point that TCM made, which is if you've never seen it, it's new to you. It doesn't matter when it came out, when it was made, it's new to you, and it's this whole new world that you get opened up to, like whatever, The Room screenings and how, or Rocky Horror. Like if you've never seen Rocky Horror and you go to one of those midnight things, it's a whole new world. I mean, I'm sure there's high school kids just now watching Rocky Horror for the very first time and having a blast doing it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where a lot of people discover Rocky Horror is in college. Remember that going to those screenings, bringing toast and...
Well, we were all experimenting.
Yes.
Some of us more than others, Chris.
two big films for me. That's a good college. Like that's a really good point. Two huge cult films. I saw Blue Velvet and Hellraiser in college.
Oh yeah,
you know when they were released in the one theater that we had in our town. Two huge cult films.
Now what makes Hellraiser a cult film?
Well. Horror is a really interesting genre. We all know, like, Evil Dead, which is... All those movies are pretty much...
I remember watching Evil Dead at a buddy's house in high school.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, Army of Darkness has got a little wider...
Covering my eyes and a lot.
I was freaked out. I was going to pay everybody to turn it off.
Yeah.
Yeah, but horror movies are great because horror fans are really, really... Like they're really like cult members.
Don't you think, like...
They're extremely passionate
about that. Similar to the quirky comedy, like don't even think horror movies are almost made. They're almost cult films, by design.
By the genre, the horror genre is almost
with the exception of Piranha 3D.
Right. Yeah.
Because like most, wouldn't you, if you were to sit there and come up with a list of your 20 favorite horror movies, wouldn't you put most of them in the cult category as well?
Probably. But I mean, like Halloween, for instance, everyone loves that movie.
Sure.
Sure.
Friday the 13th, everyone loves it.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Those are
mainstream
movies
horror.
Everyone loves.
Yeah. Scream is mainstream horror.
Yeah. But that's barely horror. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. you know, when I think of like real horror, I think gory films. You
like Hellraiser-y stuff.
Hellraiser, yeah, is definitely, but it's also because one, it was an independent movie. Release and very limited release.
What was that like one horror time? Movie? I remember you showed us years ago when we were at somebody's house. Was it Possession?
Oh, that is definitely.
There was this horror movie that Neil just picked, and I'm like, oh, this is unsettling.
But you can see how I like really fucked up cult horror movies because that movie is extremely disturbing. And yeah, it had Sam Neill and Isabella Gianni, directed by. It was like a Czech director. I forget his name. Yeah, very, very, yeah, that movie. And I don't even know if I showed you the extended director's cut of that film. You may have even seen the edited cut.
Wow.
Which, yeah, you probably should.
It's still burned into my mind.
A movie, called Possession.
20 years ago.
And I totally recommend that movie to anybody who loves really messed up horror films. A movie called Possession, 1981. Sam Neill, Isabella Gianni. Yeah, it's a great movie, but it's incredibly fucked up. But then Hellraiser was too at the time.
Well, I remember the trailer for Hellraiser and just going, what the fuck? That guy with the nails in his face going.
Right, Pinhead.
Holy shit. Like that was, I was like, I got to see that. That just looks ridiculous. The director of Possession is Andrzej Zulawski.
Yeah, that's a tricky name to say, I know.
So horror movies, as we were saying, has a lot to do with cult movies. Now, what do you think are some horror movies, though, that are a little more mainstream and don't deserve to be cult movies?
Well,
like, do movies ever lose their cult status because too many people discover them?
You know what? I've thought about that, and I can't think of a film yet.
Because
maybe somebody else could help us.
When you look at Evil Dead,
that's an interesting question.
Evil Dead's being remade. It's, you know, there's three movies. And that, are they still cult movies at this point? Army of Darkness definitely is.
I think so. But obviously the remakes will never, you know, like any remake of anything is, for most part, is never going to have any kind of status like that.
Right.
Plus they're going with a series. I mean, the whole tone of that movie is going to suck anyway.
Yeah.
I'm kind of still really surprised that those guys are even involved.
Yeah. We'll see how it shakes out. But
you know, I know Bruce has got a house and a wife and kids.
Yeah.
And a farm, and he's got things to pay for. So
he's got burn notice.
That's true. He does. He does have burn
notice. So now, what? Getting off of horror and comedy, now, what are some other genres? Like science fiction is definitely, you have a lot of cult movies in science fiction.
Yeah.
And some really weird and kind of cool low-budge ones.
And some weird, sometimes the sci-fi crosses over a little. Like Event Horizon apparently is a fairly popular film.
Oh, I don't get that at all. We had another guest on that loved Event Horizon. I hated Event Horizon.
I didn't care for it, but there is apparently, it has a following. So Event Horizon, it pops up on
it's a really graphic sci-fi
horror movie. Sci-fi.
It's more horror than science fiction than anything. Yeah. But it's all like random horror too. It's just like, all right, now here's the next scene of something.
I just didn't care for that movie anyway.
But now I'm thinking science fiction. When I think of cult science fiction movies, I think of some of the low budget ones like Cube. I always think of for like a kind of a cult
a
science
film.
Fiction movie, but
also kind of gory though.
It is gory, but then also like there's an indie film we talked about earlier in one of our earlier episodes that science fiction only went to Netflix and DVD. Inc.
Yeah, you're right.
It
was one of those movies that we like called each other and said, "Dude, have you seen that movie?"
Yeah.
Oh my god, yes.
Yeah, that was that.
Like we both called each other and tell each other about the same film, and we just happened to watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, just randomly. Yeah. I'm like, "Oh, this looks
and
interesting."
It was
I'm
really
like,
"Oh good.
My god, this is so good." And that's the kind of movie you're like, "I wish this director had $100 million."
Yeah.
So but to do what he did with what little he had to work with was nothing short of amazing.
Absolutely.
So
it was a little treat when you find
it.
Those.
Really was. The script writing alone. I mean, he said, you know what? I've written a $100 million script. Fuck it. I'm going to make it for a couple $100,000, if that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. I'm going to do it. And he did.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
I wouldn't say like some of the, I guess you could go into some of the sport cult movies. Like, I would probably put Slapshot.
That was exactly what
as a cult film in the sense that
yeah, absolutely, I would agree with that.
Again, it was you know, I think I'm sure it did well box office wise when it came out because it had Paul Newman in it.
Yeah,
but it is such a hockey fan.
Yeah,
you have to be a hockey fan, and I'm wondering now, and since we've talked about it on the show, and it came out a couple weeks ago on DVD, Goon, which got a limited release.
Yeah, I was curious about it.
I loved Goon.
Did you?
And okay. I think Goon is going to be. I keep waiting for my buddy Walker, who played minor league hockey, to watch it because I'm like, dude, you got to watch this because you were in this. You played for like the Maine Pilots or whatever, some Bruin organization team. And he was like, oh man, we go to these, you know, we'd go to Moose Knuckle, Canada, and just, you know, there'd be 15 bars and a tire factory, and we just fight our way through it and drink and whatever else.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm wondering if Goon is gonna fill that same void because Slapshot, and to me, what also makes a cult movie, and Slapshot is one of these, and it's definitely, it falls into the comedy category, is there's lines from the movie that are almost like a secret handshake. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if anyone who's
in the club,
sure. If you say that line, they're going to just start throwing lines back and forth with you. You know what I mean?
And that can go for like any number of, you know, we are the knights who say me.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Boom.
Yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
And then like, you'll hear in a great crowd of people, anybody in earshot, you'll hear some people go, and you're like, yes. And that is like to me, the magic of a cult film.
Yeah. Because it is like a secret handshake when you start saying.
That's a really good way to put it, the secret handshake.
Yeah, because like.
Why didn't I write that?
Bang the barmaid on the last road trip, nipples like little racks. Like that Mo character in Slapshot is such a creep and so great. And they're all like, oh, we're going to move the team to Florida. I want to get some snatch by the pool. Like he's such a filthy. So he's got these leather jackets.
Yeah.
Mo, and he's always talking about getting laid on the road, and he's like an old creep. That's the kind of stuff that I love.
It's a good one. I want to see Goon too. So
sometimes it's you can also kind of find cult films just by the director. Like if you look at Terry Gilliam's you look at everything from Time Bandits to Baron Munchausen, rabid followings, but not everyone knows about these movies.
Yeah, Baron Munchausen's a great one because it made nothing. Yeah. The studio hated him.
Oh yeah, because it was at a huge budget.
It was enormous, but it's one of the most magical films ever.
Well, all of like
Time Bandits. I love Time Bandits.
Yeah, Time Bandits.
Did Brazil was that a breakout?
Oh, that was a whole fight. He had to fight just to release it.
Yeah,
because the American cut came in longer than the contractually obligated cut. Like in Europe, they could have a longer cut. That's fine. So the European, and it did well. But here, there was a whole fight to get him out. Yeah. He had to like steal the print, all these.
There's like three or four versions of that movie.
Yeah. He like had to take the print out of the vault from the studio, show it for critics. The critics gave an award. Then they finally kind of released it. And then they butchered another cut of like, you know, the Love Conquers All cut. And they made put like a happy ending on it. And that's what's great about, and I talk about this actually in the science fiction chapter of the book, is where you can actually see how a studio completely destroyed a movie because the Criterion Collection, when you buy Brazil, you get all the discs. You get the different versions of the movie.
Yeah.
So you can see like the European cut. You can see the Love Conquers All cut. You can literally see how it was destroyed along with all the documentaries of the process. Mm-hmm. And Brazil is one of the finest movies ever made. When you look at it, it's really an amazing movie.
It is. And a great example of a science fiction cult.
Yeah, it's amazing science fiction premise, cult film, and it's if you haven't seen Brazil, don't see the Love Conquers All. Actually, you'd see all the versions to really get an idea, but don't see the Love Conquers All one first.
What are some of the movies? Because you know, the end of every chapter in the book is a top 10 and bottom 10 of the genre.
Although Neil just did his top cult movies.
There's no such thing as a bottom cult movie.
That was one of the things. It's a thing about cult movies. It's, you know, there's not really, how do you do the 10 best? You know, everyone's going to have their own 10 best.
Sure.
But Neil is generally going to be right. for the 10 best.
But my 10 best are the best 10
yeah.
best. Well, you know, there are obviously there were things like, you know, like Rocky Horror. You have to put that on a top 10 list. There's no way not to. And I thought Plan 9 is another one that just mm-hmm. goes down in the books as being legendary. There's just too many. I mean, you know, like I said, you can do some. Like, some people consider Blade Runner an actual cult film, and certainly when it came out, it was, you know, 30 years ahead of its time.
Yeah,
and people didn't. I think now that might be an example of a movie that's not entirely a class. I mean, a cult anymore because right. it's. So many people have accepted it.
And so many cuts. At some point, if you have multiple cuts of your film, after the third or fourth one, you got to stop calling it a cult movie.
but again, at the time, it certainly.
I'm reading right now. You know, the budget on that film was $28 million in 1982, which is a lot of money
at the time. In 82, sure.
It had a $6 million opening weekend, and its gross for the year was just under $28 million. So, like, does that figure into it being cult or not? Because it wasn't when you spend $28 million on a movie back then. That's $75 million.
I bet you Showgirls was higher. Let's look at the budget for Showgirls because that was the
script was $1 million.
Oh my God, that movie! Everyone, the studios just kept trying to shove that down your throat. Zone midnight screenings, you don't want to miss it. And then it comes out and it's this biggest piece of shit anyone's ever seen. And then it becomes a cult on the other side, the Ed Wood side of it.
Its budget was $45 million.
I told you,
like. Wouldn't you just want to go?
And when was that?
That was 95. 95, so it came out 13 years after.
Still, that's a big difference.
It's a big difference.
Sure, it
made $37 million because it was a joke. It was a complete joke. And that's a movie now you would want to watch with a bunch of friends and just laugh your asses off and yell shit at the screen.
Sure, and you know, plan a drinking game around it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, whenever there's an awkward moment.
Because that's the thing that I find like you know. Would Blade Runner is the small percentage of people that know about it does that figure in? And would now today when you mention Blade Runner to people, are they going to go, oh yeah, I know, I've seen that, or I watched it on DVD or whatever? So that makes it less of a cult film, because I don't know, the fan fanaticism. We talked about this in an episode several weeks ago with Sean Cullen. We went into this whole thing about this that movie and Ridley Scott and how amazing it is and how, like you said, it was 30 years ahead of its time. And it made you – it's showing where our society is going, you know, potentially could go. You know, it's very dystopian. So how does that
– 6 years.
Next September. It's going to be like that in September. Because I always figure that in because, like, some people mention, like, Coen Brothers movies as being cult. And is that just because – they never, I mean, some of their movies have been huge successes.
Sure. You know what? I think that's fair because when you look at movies like their first one, Blood Simple, and also Raising Arizona is a huge cult film. But then they're smaller movies like The Man Who Wasn't There.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that was like some little black and white movie they did. And,
it's a little noir film.
Yeah, it's very good. It's good. It's a good movie. But then you have movies like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
Where I really think they thought, oh, this is going to be our cult film, and it ended up being like a huge,
huge success.
Well, like No Country for Old Men, you know, had it been this like limited release indie film that you had to kind of stumble across to find, you'd be like, I mean, it's a great movie. Mm. But again, I think, is that because the Coen brothers have gotten bigger with their films? I mean, like Raising Arizona was a big summer comedy.
It was, but it also had that real quirk to it. And the other thing about No Country for Old Men was based on a famous novel, and it was a much bigger movie in scope. Mm-hmm. So I think it was more for, you know, the big studio system kind of thing.
Yeah. I think...
You know, to a degree. I mean, it was still a drama that, you know, not a ton of people saw.
Sure, but the people also who like it, you know, cult film, I should say, you know, kind of what he says, the fans are are really fanatical.
Right. Like Repo Man, I know, is one of your favorite movies.
Yeah, that's an old good one, and Harry Dean Stanton.
That's a great cult film. Because that's a movie, I remember when it came out, it was one of the films that I saw in high school, and some people in high school are just like, I didn't get it. Like the space thing, and what is it going? You know, and you're just like, forget it.
What's in the trunk? It doesn't really matter what's in the trunk.
which brings me, like... And any, like, Harry Dean Stanton is like a good barometer for if it's a cult film or not.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because if he's in it doing his thing, which he's very good at, then it's like, this is a good cult. It reminds me too of going back to this movie, Neighbors, which I absolutely love. It's like Belushi's last film with Dan Aykroyd.
Right.
And it's, to me, it's cult on a lot of levels. It's a comedy that didn't do well.
Right.
Like they had a big budget because he was like on cocaine and everything and you know, everyone was hoping for another Blues Brothers and Lampoon. You know what I mean?
Him and Aykroyd together.
That's what they were hoping for. And they did, you know, I think it's great. If you read in the book Wired, it talks about how there was some studio head that was very smart in how he marketed that movie just to make its money back. But the movie did not do that well.
No.
Some critics hated it.
Yeah.
You know, and some critics hated Blues Brothers too, because they're like, why would you have the two stars in the movie and sunglasses on the whole film? You know, like, Belushi's the big star. Doesn't take a sunglass. We don't see his eyes till the end of the movie, you know? And so... Neighbors.
I'm going to a gin mill.
Yeah, I don't know why. That's my favorite critics. 23 Skidoo on this talkie.
Well, then I'm going to go report on Hollywoodland.
The Hindenburg's coming to town. Neighbors is a film I remember that I used to use that as a barometer to see if someone had a sense of humor that would mesh with mine.
Yeah.
Because some people were like, I saw it, it just didn't make sense. Like, and I'd be like, oh, okay, well, I can't talk with you anymore.
You don't... Put your key in the bowl.
Yeah, that's good. Put your key in the bowl, take your pants off.
No, take your key out of the bowl and drive yourself home. You just don't understand.
You're too dumb to have sex with. I'm afraid if we have sex, it'll rub off and I will think this movie is stupid.
So should we go around and kind of mention some of our favorite cult movies?
Sure.
Let's let our guests go first. Neil, a couple of your favorite cult movies of all time, regardless of the genre.
Oh, of all time. Wow.
Could be animated, could be anything.
Yeah, there's so many favorites. Well, you know, Blue Velvet has always been a favorite of mine. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a landmark film for me. I mean, it really, you know, it spoke to me. Don't know.
Really?
Not sure if that movie is supposed to speak to anybody. Especially when they're in college.
Yeah.
It's amazing there aren't more bodies buried under this. But I loved that movie. It made an impact on me.
In what way? Like, what was it about? Was it the darkness?
It was so...
The weird humor? What was it?
Both of those things. Yeah. I love macabre humor. I love things that are dark and funny. And it had those things going in spades.
Sure.
The lines were just so funny. And that's a movie that had a lot of repeatable lines. You know, it's a strange world. And when you think about McLachlan saying that in the film, it has a really weird context. Especially against everything Frank Booth.
Right.
You know, now it's dark. Yeah, well, you know, I didn't stop saying that for months. That movie. There's another one actually with Dennis Hopper, another one I loved, River's Edge.
Sure.
Great cult film, and it was definitely.
He would answer the phone, checks in the mail, like that was just, I love that.
And it was like, you know, Dennis Hopper was, you know, he had that such a resurgence.
Mm-hmm. He had like three 80s. Resurgences in his life.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? He did, but that was like the first one, like the early '80s, the mid to early '80s, I think were. And you always forget that Keanu Reeves was in.
He sure was. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's too bad we always remember.
What was that line? You have Bud and Bottles?
Yeah, you have Bud and Bottles?
Yeah. He's carrying his blow-up doll.
Carrying the blow-up doll. He's got his hand up to the
It's a great scene. See River's Edge.
Yeah, definitely.
Everybody, if you haven't seen it yet.
Crispin Glover.
Crispin Glover, yeah, yeah.
Really, oh, man. Great. He's another Harry Dean Stanton.
It is a really weird creep fest of a movie.
It is a creepy film.
Indeed. I'm also going to go, it's not a film, but, well, it was, Serenity, but TV, Firefly, probably the greatest cult show of all time.
Film, I got to tell you, here's Serenity. A great example. Mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about the TV show. No. And a friend of mine who was a big fan of the TV show took me to it, and I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, it's
and
pretty cool. I didn't see watch the show either, and I liked the movie.
It would be a culty TV show and film.
And I know we started watching it, I think, Chris, and we talked about it, Chris, when it was first on, and it didn't jive.
It didn't, I didn't like it at first, and I watched an episode, and I'm like, I'm not really into this, but I'm like, well, let me see the movie, and I liked the movie,
And I eventually bought the series because it's so good.
And it wasn't that many episodes.
It was now 13.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon's like the king of cult anything, with the exception of the event.
Well, there's a cult of Joss Whedon, really. I mean, people will buy anything that he will really do.
And I think that Cabin in the Woods is going to be... I think it's going to be a cult film.
A lot of people discover it on DVD.
But it's absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. There's a prediction for you. That's going to be like one of those movies that people
That's the only reaction I've heard about it.
It's amazing.
I haven't heard anybody say they saw it and was like, no one's giving me that reaction to Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, I can say people either liking it or hating it.
Like just fans who listen to the show on Twitter and Facebook have been like, you got to see this.
Yeah, Dean Haglund really liked it too.
It's an amazing film. Yeah. It really is. No question about it.
Christopher, you're a culty cult?
I mentioned it before, but Monty Python and the Holy Grail was a movie I literally watched. I remember at my buddy's house just down the road, we would just go and watch it. Then we would watch parts of it. Then we would have friends over and just show them parts of the movie. And it was just one of those movies that introduced me not only to Monty Python, but to just kind of cult films in general. And we touched on a couple of the other ones, like UHF was another one watched many, many times.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, some of the other ones, like this is a weird one, is the original Transformers movie. I actually saw that in three times in the movie theaters. Good. I mean, you watch it now. I actually bought it on DVD. It was like a 20th anniversary edition.
Yeah.
Good luck finding the DVDs now. For whatever reason, they pulled them. But it was that movie. It was... When you had what's made it so interesting, and as a kid, I was like, I went nuts over it. But you know, you watch the Transformers, you come home after school, watch the Transformers every day. It was really cool. Then the movie comes out and kills 90% of the characters in the show. Like 90% of the characters actually die in this movie. And I'm like, oh my god, they're killing all these cartoon characters, the Transformers. So I remember buying. I have that on DVD right now, and. Let's see, Holy Grail. I think even like movies like ones that you wouldn't really kind of expect to be cult movies that you would really kind of like even like another one, Life of Brian another Monty Python movie, but it was like, oh, here's a comedy about Christ, you know. And back then, I'm like, well, how is that going to be
mistaken for the Messiah? What a hilarious premise.
Yeah, and the thing that was so amazing about Monty Python too is they were never getting studio notes. You can't studio note a Monty Python movie. Mm-hmm, true. You know, aliens come down and take Brian for like a ride, you know, things like that. You can't, it's all sketchy kind of stuff. You can't note that. That's what makes their movies so interesting. And then Time Bandits is another one that I saw as a kid, and then I bought it, and then I watched it again. And I got so much more out of it like the second time when I was older, because it was that weird kind of hybrid of a kid's movie, but at the same time, it had a real darkness and kind of like some metaphysical stuff in there.
Yeah.
And it was a really, really interesting movie. So I really recommend, I'm a big Terry Gilliam fan, Time Bandits, and of course, Brazil. So those would be my picks.
I would go. I mentioned it. Neighbors, the Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi movie. Blood Simple, obviously.
Yes.
And then another lesser known. I don't know if it's culty. It might just be more lesser known. But John Belushi movie is Continental Divide.
Oh, I remember that.
Where
I do remember
the
that.
Writer for the Chicago Sun Times, and like there's just some real subtle things that he's doing, you know. and especially if you read the book Wired, where he was like, I want to try to do more serious stuff or whatever. And
yeah, it was like a serious sort of...
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of like a rom-com, yeah, sort of.
Yeah, it was.
But it was a studio rom-com.
Yeah, it was. And it was pretty interesting. And yeah. Then, Billy Jack. I
love Billy Jack.
Billy Jack, baby. There's horses that want to be turned into wild horses that a corporation wants to turn into dog food. And then there's a hippie school for runaways that they want to shut down. And he defends the defenseless because that's what Billy Jack is all about. Born Losers is decent, but Billy Jack was the one. Jack came out after Born Losers. That's the one. And then, because I'm a surfer and I'm crazy for Swayze, Point Break.
Somebody had to bring up Point Break.
It's on everybody's cult film.
It's a ridiculous but amazing movie where, Gary Busey's in it.
I'm a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah, I'm a U.S. Marshal, and Swayze's awesome as Bodhi, the surf guru, who's like, surfing's where you lose yourself and you find yourself. And he does martial arts. He sits every weirdo hippie thing that I'm into. It's great.
And they do in Hollywood, there's a theater that does a live performance of that. And I'm dying to see it.
Yeah.
I am dying to see it.
Yeah, don't they like pull someone out of the audience to play? To play Keanu Reeves' part or something? That's
probably
what I heard.
That wouldn't surprise me. And anybody could probably really do it.
Yes. Well, folks, put on our Facebook fan page or the message boards or both your favorite cult films. And
yeah, we'd like to hear what you guys are watching and making all your friends watch.
What really messed up movies.
I know we sort of went kind of wide with this particular
genre. Yeah, it's all right. It's giving it a little smattering. And if you want to get more in depth, read Neil's chapter in the Comedy Film Nerd's Guide to Movies.
Well, thank you so much, Neil, for being on our program.
Well, it's always a pleasure, gentlemen.
And
always.
Thank you for all your words on the site. We appreciate it.
Sure. There's the Piranha 3 Double D.
It's
on the site now.
Oh, it sure is.
There's a bunch of
reviews. To be confused with the first Piranha, which was good.
Yeah,
actually, the first remake, as it
how
were.
Did they fuck that up?
I don't know, but I think the better question is how did they make the first one so magical?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a better question.
I expected that to be dumb too, and like why remake
and
Piranha?
Wouldn't,
and it was awesome. And
so
this
now,
thing,
because the second
so
one was such a piece of shit and the first one was such a fluke, would you say that down the road Piranha is going to be kind of in the cult of the new cult films?
I would certainly. It's going to be for me, that's for sure. But I actually don't even know. Like, I don't think I've ever even spoken to anyone who actually saw the one that I loved from 2010. I don't know if anyone saw it at all. I don't know. I have no idea.
Somebody must have. They made a sequel.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's the Gulager clan, John Gulager. Uh-huh. And the guy who. People who wrote the multiple writers were people who, like, they write sequels to movies you never expected to have a sequel to, like Hollow Man 2 Pulse 2 and I mean, it's just like, why are they making sequels to these movies? So this is sort of kind of goes into that genre.
Bucket.
So yeah, that bucket.
All right,
but I highly recommend the first one. Piranha was excellent.
Well, folks, check out many of these movies that we've spoken of today and read the book and read Neil's chapter. And Neil, how can people find you on the internet? Your Twitter handle is?
Either Film Nerd Neil, which is convenient, I thought, or Wickley, Wyclea.
Nice.
That one's in code.
That's the cult Twitter handle. That's the lesser known cult Twitter handle.
And on the Facebooky, we're on the old Facebook.
All right.
Great.
Outstanding.
Well, thanks, Neil, as always. And that was we'll be doing more themed episodes this summer as well. So we'd like to thank you guys for listening.
Yeah. And, go to the website, comedyfilmnerds.com, Facebook fan page, at comedyfilmnerds on Twitter.
Yep. There's different content on each place, actually, especially the website. We've got a lot of writers writing reviews, and sometimes they're different than what we talk about here, so you get a little different opinions.
Yeah, and the fan reviews, and then, of course, updates for the podcast festival, because the schedule is, we might be adding, we don't know, different updates on the festival, so go to lapodfest.com. All my tour dates and everything are at grahamillwood.com.
And on the Comedy Film Nerds
and
site,
the Comedy Film Nerds calendar. So check those out.
Yeah, great. Well, we want to thank you guys, especially for supporting the store and buying. You guys have been really great. We really appreciate it. Summer Movie Preview is still available on iTunes and at the store. And again, we couldn't do this without you guys, so we really appreciate your support. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And hey, buy the book. Yeah. Christmas is only 6 months away.
It is. Yeah. Get it done now. Get your Labor Day presents today.
Yeah. Yeehaw.
All right. Thank you, Neil. My name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini, and as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Not a cult film.